contribute and fill in all empty chairs, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Test 1, 2.
Hello. It's on. Hello and welcome. This is the first forum of 2020. We'd like to welcome you and thank you, Supervisor Arnold and Ellen Barrow, for coming tonight. This forum is brought to you by the Atascadero Chamber of Commerce and our Legislative and Economic Development Committee. We selected some questions for our candidates tonight. They were carefully selected by a group of people from diverse backgrounds and ages so that they were fair and partial and we could have a very nice forum tonight. Anyway, so at the end, we'll start with the three questions. Our moderator, Mike Manchek from the EVC, is here tonight, and he will be asking the questions. We'll have opening remarks to begin with, then the questions, and then followed by closing remarks. And we've carved out 30 minutes at the end that you can meet, mix, and mingle with our candidates in the lobby and ask your questions directly to them at that point. So without further ado, I'll pass this over to Mike Manchek.
Thank you, Emily. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the first candidate forum for District 5. I want to say a couple things. One, this is really an important part of the democratic process, and as I was doing a little research on candidate forums, the first one was 387 years ago in 1633 in Massachusetts. So let's keep the tradition going. Let's not do anything tonight that will stop that. Also, just some housekeeping matters. Please mute your phones, if you would, please. While we're doing the questioning, please no interruptions. There will be 30 minutes after the event for questions you can have of the candidates in the lobby or here afterwards. What else is there for housekeeping? That is about it. We're going to do a coin toss as to who goes first. And we're going to jump right into the opening remarks. Three questions for each. And then we'll have closing comments, and then we will end at exactly 7:30. So, Ms. Arnold, heads or tails?
Tails tonight, huh?
Tails it is.
Really?
Okay, so you're first?
I never win a coin toss.
First time ever.
Okay. Opening statement.
Please, if you would take 5 minutes for an opening.
Great. Remarks. Here we go. The first thing I want to do is thank you all for coming out tonight on this kind of chilly evening. I really appreciate it, and I want to thank the Atascadero Chamber for hosting this, the United Methodist Church for housing this event, and it's really heartening to see how many people are interested in this upcoming election. So in my opening statement, I just wanted to introduce myself to anyone here in the audience that doesn't really know much about me or what I have been doing while serving you as a county supervisor. I was first elected in 2012, and I have to say it's been such an honor to represent my home county for these past little more than 7 years. I never really envisioned myself as an elected official, and I think sometimes life takes funny turns, and for me it certainly has. I came to San Luis, moved permanently to go to Cal Poly, like so many people. Here I am all these many years later. I married into a multi-generational ranching family in the Pozo Valley and spent the first years, the 70s, basically helping my husband with a lot of on horseback in wide open spaces. And when we started our family, my two little ones were out there pretty isolated, and as many parents do, I thought, okay, well, they need some socialization, came to Atascadero to enroll them in preschool, and realized they would be on a waiting list until they were probably in college. There just weren't enough preschools in the North County to accommodate everyone. And that was when probably my life took one of the more unexpected turns, one of the first ones. I decided to roll up my sleeves, had to take a few classes. I'd been an animal science major, but I purchased a preschool building here in Atascadero. For 17 years, I owned and operated that, just small preschool, 24 students, and myself and two other teachers. It was a wonderful, wonderful job. I loved it. It was, I spent a lot of time, long hours, very little time off, but it was very rewarding. And I think maybe it made me feel like I eventually, when I did get into the politics, that I did have a connection. In that 17 years, I probably, I became close with over 1,000 families, and I was entrusted with their most precious possessions, their small children. So, but I did have a bird's eye view of young families and what people did to make a living in this area. I was an integral part of the community. In that same time frame, our two children, my husband Steve and I have a son and daughter that are just approaching their 40s, hard to believe, married, still living in the county. But we were very involved in those years with coaching youth sports and making wonderful friends through our kids' activities, and it was really great. The second really unexpected turn that my life took was when I was asked to join or get into the political arena as a legislative assistant to then-Supervisor Mike Ryan. And that is where I started gaining the experience that's really helped me, I think, do a better job as I try to represent you. County government is big. It has a lot of departments. It does a lot of things. And I spent 5 years as an assistant doing research, representing my boss out in the public, and really learning about county government. Then I had another exciting opportunity. For 12 years, I worked for Assemblyman and then later Senator Sam Blakesley. So that gave me an insight to what other layers of government, other levels of government, their roles, and how that all worked. In 2012, I was elected in my own right to represent you at the County Board of Supervisors, and I have, as I say, it's been such an honor. I try to think every day, and every time I take a vote, I kind of look, imagine many of you are behind me, and what is my vote? How is it going to impact the people that I represent? And not everyone agrees, as we all know, on every issue, but I can tell you and promise you that for over 7 years, I've taken every vote seriously. I've done my research, and I really try to do what I think in my heart is the best thing to take care of our families, people of all ages in the county, and keep our county vibrant. So, again, it's been a wonderful honor. I'm happy you're here tonight. I am asking for support for a third term. There are a few things that I would like to to finish or see through that I have been working on. And speaking of that, I want to, if I still, it's time to stop. Okay, my closing comments, I'll finish my remarks. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Barreau, 5 minutes, please.
Sorry, didn't have a check on the mic. My name's Ellen Barreau. I am a candidate for District 5 supervisor. And I wanted to thank, of course, the Methodist Church and the Chamber for putting on the event. But I wanted to thank all of you who made it out here tonight on a Thursday night. Who would have expected this many people to show up? And I am deeply rooted in this community. And when I look out at all your faces, I think of all the times I have interacted with so many community members. We chose to come here 20 years ago with my young family, and I raised 2 children here, so I was very involved in the schools and volunteering, being the team mom for their sports, and I got to meet many of you during that time period. I was very committed to my community, and I was involved in nonprofits during that time as well. And when my kids were like maybe 6 and 3, I was appointed to the Planning Commission. And that was a great learning experience. I learned all about city government. And I realized that to change things and to make things better, you have to be a policymaker. So I ran for city council, and I was on city council and also served as mayor. And that was a really exciting time for our community. And it was exciting for me because I learned so much, and I got to meet even more people during that time period. And it also gave me a flavor of how county government works as well, because I served on the Integrated Waste Management Authority and also the Homeless Services Oversight Council. So that was an exciting time. I've been in healthcare for over 30 years. I'm a registered dietitian. I initially worked at Twin Cities Community Hospital, where, again, I met a lot of people in the health community. And then I moved over to the Atascadero State Hospital. And I have to say, it may be a stressful place to work, but there's a lot of great people that work there. And it's a pleasure for me to be there. I also run a small business with my husband, and we've been doing that the entire time we've been here. Another great way to meet people in the community. We've used our company to also give back to the community. We've done projects for ECHO and for Habitat for Humanity, and we've incorporated the IBW volunteering their time as part of their community projects. And being at the state hospital, all state employees are union members, and I'm the chief steward of my union at the hospital, and I'm proud to be supported by the working families of our county. It's very important to me. My passion is for good governance and for governance that's inclusive. I bring the skills needed to open the doors of our government so people feel proud of their government. I bring science and facts into the decision-making process. I'm proud when I can make a decision and do what's right for our community. Our county is at a crossroads. We need to be embracing opportunities, and we need to be facing challenges with leadership to resolve those issues. We're facing the biggest challenges ever, threats to our economy, our environment, and our way of life. And over the past 9 months, I've heard over and over again that people feel that their voices aren't heard or valued and that their concerns are not being addressed. Now more than ever. Well, so we can't afford four more years of bad governance. We can't afford 4 more years of inaction on the most pressing issues of our time. Now more than ever, we need smart, honest leadership to guide our county to the future, where we can make good decisions and create an open and accessible government for everyone. My vision for Slo County is where we can find the right balance between a thriving economy and protecting our environment. I want to see careful stewardship of our water resources and supporting our agricultural community. I want us to meet the challenges of a post-Diablo economy. Over the past several years, we have seen a failure of leadership at the hands of the board majority. It's time for new leadership. We get there by working together, and we get there by electing representatives who reflect our values. I look forward to your questions tonight, and again, I thank you for being here and being part of this process.
Thank you very much. So we're going to start the question portion. We'll go back to Ms. Arnold, and we'll ask alternate with these questions. If you need for me to repeat the question, feel free to do that. And here's the first question for Ms. Arnold. Our county has a great lack of affordable housing for seniors, homeless, low-income, as well as workforce housing for the middle class, which includes working persons and families. How do you suggest addressing this large problem with housing? And please be specific.
Okay. This county is such a wonderful place to live, and we know that for decades we've had a shortage of housing inventory. Many of you in this room, I know you remember, for decades there was kind of a no-growth policy here in the county, and we didn't see a lot of houses built, and now here we are with another new generation kind of looking around, where are we going to live? Affordable housing is, well, it's challenging, and for so many reasons. Again, this is a beautiful place to live, so supply and demand comes into regulations that have just kind of piled on in the last several decades have increased costs, and agree or not agree with many of the regulations, it's definitely increased costs. And anyone that's tried to build a house knows that you can spend a lot of money before you ever get a stick in the ground. And then, you know, I've discovered that when I was young and you went to buy a house, you really bought a house. Now when you go to buy a house, you buy a piece of a road, a piece of a park, and on it goes. So housing is very expensive. My solutions, and we discuss this a lot, it's challenging. I know that no one wants to see San Luis Obispo County built over. But by zoning, carefully planning, design build so that we have houses that various sizes that people can have starter houses, et cetera, that they might be able to afford. And then streamlining the process, of course, I think that we can make housing more affordable for the folks here in this county. 25% of the population here in this county is 60 years of age and older. One big step the county's taken recently is to open up secondary dwellings for many of the large lots that we see throughout the county, and also tiny homes and some innovative things. The reason that I've been very supportive of that is the demographics of this county. We have a lot of older people. We have a lot of young people that can't quite get into the market and need a chance to be able to save their money. So the secondary units, the smaller housing, where families can share property and be comfortable and have their own housing situation, I think is a really good fit for this county and the demographics that we see. Mike mentioned the homeless situation. We are seeing homelessness increase statewide. That's going to be another challenge. We see amongst the homeless population some mental illness, some drug abuse. This county just opened, many of you know, it's been a little over a year ago that we opened the Prado at 40 Prado, a homeless services center that not only provides 100 beds, food, it provides, and when I say a homeless services center, it provides medical opportunities, counseling, detox, all those things in one place. It even has a dog kennel, because we know from experience that many of the homeless folks don't want to leave their best friend and come into a shelter if they can't bring their dog. So we're working on that issue. We started the 50 Now program several years ago when I chaired the Homeless Oversight Council. If you're not familiar with that program, we go out, we identify the most chronically homeless, and by that I mean severely ill, if they're elderly, and we bring them in. We surround them with wraparound services and try to find them a permanent housing and casework to go along with it. So that's been another successful program that's helped us provide housing. We have wonderful programs, and this county spends millions of dollars on trying to find affordable housing for those in need. So we have a lot of great programs started and will continue.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Would you like me to repeat the question?
Yes, please.
Absolutely. Our county has a great lack of affordable housing for seniors, homeless, low income, as well as workforce housing for middle class, which includes working persons and families. How do you suggest addressing this large problem with housing? And please be specific.
It's a great question, and it's one I hear everywhere I go, that the affordability issue in our county is one of those crux issues that must be addressed. When you think about affordability, we think about, well, can my kids afford to live here once they graduate from college? Are they moving to Boise, Idaho because they can't make it here? And when you think about, even if your own kids can't live here, who is going to be running the economy? And so affordability is tightly linked to our economy and having a strong workforce. So we have to keep that in mind, because sometimes people say, well, affordable housing, I don't want those people living in my neighborhood. And we have to think of it as more as workforce housing. These are the people who are driving our economy. In regards to what has happened so far, I know that the incumbent has shown a failure of leadership by not having projects lined up. Affordable housing is a problem that never goes away, and so you need to be constantly working and having projects in the pipeline, and it takes a great deal of effort to coordinate all the different agencies involved to get that done. I know that the incumbent has kind of played with the budget in the sense that she's taken money from mental health services and from homelessness services to put into the roads budget, which is fine, but a budget is a reflection of your values. And so if you're going to be moving money from something that a lot of people think is very important to something that could be handled in a different way, I don't think that's right. In terms of mental illness and homelessness, I work at a mental health facility, and that is a very important part of what I've learned working there, is that mental illness is everywhere. There's just different shades of it. And when we look at the homelessness population, there's certainly an element there. But there's no stereotype of a homeless person. It could be mental illness. It could be a vet with PTSD. It could be a lot of different things. So we have to have a lot of compassion, and we have to provide support as a community. And that is one thing that people tell me when I go around the community. People are seriously distressed by the increasing numbers of homelessness on our streets, and we want to do something about it. So, okay, homelessness. Okay, back to the affordability issue is that when, I kind of lost my train of thought there. Can you repeat the question one more time? I want to make sure I'm
answering
all parts.
Sure. Our county has a great deal of a lack of affordable housing for seniors, homeless, low income, as well as workforce housing, and that includes families as well. Mm-hmm. How do you suggest addressing this large problem with housing? And please be specific.
That's what I forgot to mention, is that when we think about what kind of houses people are looking for, we realize that not everybody wants to have the house in, you know, west of Tascadero. Some people just want to have a small home to live in, or they want to have alternative living. And when we think about seniors, there's some great programs that we have in our county already, that if you have a big home and you have an extra room, you can have someone share that home with you. It's called Home Share. And they can have a companion to help people stay in their own homes, but they can also provide a room for maybe a young professional or a student. And so what I found is that people have come up with a lot of creative ways to come up with additional units that people can use. And so I think that we have to be open-minded, and we have to reach out to all those different nonprofits and community members that have creative ideas on how we can address this. But this is something that's going to always be present, and it's something that if we're going to be a strong community, we have to make sure that everyone can afford to live here and that we will have a stronger community because of it. And someday I really want my children to be able to live here too, and I'm sure you do, because having family in your own community is so important. And it's one of my visions that there will be a lot of options out there for people. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We can alternate the questions. Ms. Broad, if you want to start with the second question. So the question is, the county region is known to have wages that are low. And in fact, the Workforce Development Board in the county states that the median income has been below the state and national average. But at the same time, we have a county that is very high cost of living. The county is actually reported to be the sixth least affordable place in the nation to live by virtue of or by relative to income. So the question is, how do you suggest addressing these issues involving wages and jobs?
That's a good one. So wages and jobs and affordability. I kind of touched on affordability a little bit already, but we are a place that people want to live, and we attract a lot of entrepreneurial type of industry. We have Cal Poly that has a lot of, that's where we get a lot of our new businesses is from Cal Poly students that come and create this new product. And so when you create a demand for a skilled workforce, this is capitalism, right? So if you need people to come to live here, then you would hope over time that the wages would go up. Of course, government can't dictate wages. Now, of course, we are involved in the negotiations process with the different unions that work for government. And I know that has been one of the concerns and one of the criticisms I've heard of the board and the board majority is that they have not kept the wages of their employees up to speed, and they don't feel like they are being able to keep up with cost of living. So I know as a state employee, and I know from working with city employees in Atascadero, is that those employees put their heart and soul into serving our community, and they deserve to have a living wage. And so when we do negotiations, we compare where different areas. So if we're trying to get employees to stay at the county, but let's say Salinas pays more or Santa Barbara pays more, then we need to make sure that we have competitive wages so we can keep our employees. And I know for a fact that the county is losing employees right and left. And I think they had their biggest loss of employees in the last year. And so when you lose all that history of our community by losing employees, that really hampers our ability to be effective as a government. So as a person who has worked in governments for so many years, I know how important it is to retain the employees that you have. In terms of encouraging others to increase their wages, I mean, the state deals with that minimum wage issue. And when minimum wage gets bumped up to $12 or $15, then that will kind of step everybody else up as well. But that also means that we're probably all going to have to pay a little more, because if you pay everybody more, then everything goes up a little bit. But I definitely believe that we should be paying people so they can afford their rent. And we've created a lot of nonprofits in our community to try to help the homeless or the people who are challenged with getting food. And I really commend those efforts. But when you think about it, it has to really goes back to leadership in Washington and making sure that we're creating policies that instead of widening the gap between the rich and the poor, that we are going to the center so we don't have people who are on the fringe, and we won't have as much people becoming homeless. It's a challenge, and this is what government does, is we look out for the people and we do what's right. And I'm part of that process. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like me to repeat the question?
No, I think we're good. Okay. So we do know that this region, and this is not new news, this beautiful region that we live in for decades, again, as an when it was more of an agricultural county, we saw the same thing. We had low wages here, and we really do have a high cost of living as people try to move here. And again, I'll repeat myself in saying that it's really a supply and demand. We have a lot of retired people that come here, can't wait to move here to this beautiful county, and they bring a lot of money with them. It creates quite a competition for housing prices, and we have an economy that's based on a lot on tourism. Now, Diablo Canyon, and we all know it's getting ready to close, and that's been very, very challenging. Personally, I was not in favor and really hoping that Diablo Canyon would remain open. Our own Assemblyman Jordan Cunningham is working in Sacramento as we speak with a bill that would at least acknowledge that that Diablo Canyon does provide emissions-free energy and dependable energy. So who knows? Stranger things have happened, but it does look like we have to prepare ourselves for the fact that our largest employer and with really high-paying jobs in this county will be gone in 2025. PG&E will still retain some jobs here, but that's a big blow to the economy. The second engine that drives our economy is tourism, and we know that tourism comes along with a lot of service jobs, hotel jobs, restaurants jobs, typically and historically low-paying jobs. So that is kind of a difficult mix when you have a lot of those kind of jobs in a place where the cost of living is high. But I will say, The median salary in this county in the last 15, 16 years has risen from $42,000, the median household income, to about $67,000. This is the working class folks. But the problem is the median house price in the county is right now $597,000. When we take a look at this mix, the county is also driven, the county employment is also driven by a lot of government agencies. So the largest employer, California Polytechnic, Cal Poly, with 3,000 employees. We have a lot of good paying jobs at Cal Poly, and they're a great partner to have in the county. The county of San Luis Obispo itself is the second largest employer with nearly 3,000 employees, and then the Department of State Hospitals, Tascadero State Hospital, is the third with almost 2,000 employees. Pacific Gas and Electric comes in fourth. It's the fourth largest employer and the first private sector employer. Then we go back to California Men's Colony, move into some of the hospitals and the healthcare, and then back into school districts. So you can see that a lot of government employment. So it's easy to say we want to raise salaries. I want to say we have added to our workforce at the county a little bit in the last few years as we can afford it. But again, this is all about balance, and we know that most governments in this state presently have a real problem with their pension debt. It's very expensive. This county is working to pay down that pension debt, and we have paid some big chunks of it. It will help free up money for higher wages. The board that I sit on is very conscious of the cost of living, and we try to keep up with the cost of living. But beyond that, we're trying to balance this. It's money coming out of everyone's pocket and going in, you know, in the way of taxes to pay for all this, and we're trying to balance. But I'm very proud to say we do have a balanced budget, and we are working on that pension debt. That can be a serious problem and has been for many government agencies, and we're trying to avoid that while still doing the best we can to pay fair wages and good wages and take care, providing benefits and other creative ways to give financial stability to the working families, not only the families that work for the county, but everyone here in the county. So, thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to take the next question, Ms. Ronald?
Of course. You're Terrific. The boss here, Mike.
So the question is going back to, again, the economy. And the question is this. One of the most important indicators of a healthy community is the existence of a vibrant business sector. Business closures have happened in our county of late, some large and some small, including companies that have actually left the state of California. As county supervisor, what would you do to ensure that the economy and the business community of North County not only remains strong, but thrives? Please provide your specific suggestions as to policies, programs, beliefs that you would recommend.
Okay, thank you for that. I wish that by myself I could do all that and make sure that everybody was thriving. But again, it's a balancing act. So at the County Board of Supervisors, one of our key roles, the land use authority and trying to zone and plan for compatibility with land use is one of our major roles. But the other one is disseminating over half a billion dollar budget. Of that half a billion, $600 million budget. About half of that is mandated, and we get money here from, as every county does, from the state and federal governments to provide a lot of the social services and public health services and those sorts of things. But we do have some discretionary funds, and we do use some of your tax dollars to work with nonprofits such as the Economic Vitality Corporation, the Hourglass Project, and other organizations that work really especially with trying to economic growth and trying to help work things out so that we can attract businesses and help our community thrive. I ran as a pro-business candidate when I first ran, and I continue to be that pro-business candidate. We have a kind of a mix and a diverse business community. It was mentioned that we have a thriving agricultural community. Went up over $1 billion in value just last year. And along with that, because of the crop and the wine grapes, we know that agriculture in this county in this decade is also kind of a tourism driver as well. And speaking of tourism, that is another huge part of the economy. We have a lot of small businesses out there that depend on, they're in the wedding business or some other tourism business events, etc. So supporting those, and we do support those kinds of businesses. We support our chambers. We work with developers. We work with a hot house in San Luis Obispo, and it's my hope that we'll soon be. We've supported the chamber and their expansions here in Atascadero, and it's my hope that we'll be able to continue that support even further to try to develop similar concepts to the hot house, which is just helping to establish workplaces for young entrepreneurs to get off the ground so that they can get going and stay here in the community.
Thank you very much. Would you like me to repeat the question?
Please.
One of the most important indicators of a healthy community is the existence of a vibrant business sector. Business closures have happened in our county of late, some large, some small, and some of these companies have actually left the state of California. As a county supervisor, what would you do to ensure that the economy and business community, especially in North County, remains strong and thrives? So please provide your specific suggestions, whether it be policies, programs, or beliefs about doing this.
Well, I think that your economy is a reflection of your community. And when it comes to business, we need to make sure there's a level playing field for everyone who wants to run a business, whether it's the permitting process or belonging to a chamber, anything that's out there. When I'm thinking about North County, I'm thinking about the water situation. Atascadero, luckily, has been well managed, but we have a thriving wine industry and agricultural industry in the North County, and that is currently being threatened by the groundwater sustainability plan that is going to be submitted later this month. When I think about back into the days of the recession and how we all were struggling to survive and stay in our county, one of the things that was thriving was the North County wine industry and tourism industry. and that is an essential part of our county's economy. So we can't take for granted that, you know, if that water goes away and we have to shut down businesses in the winery and in the irrigated agricultural sector, that won't affect every single person in this room. Currently, the incumbent has been shepherding the groundwater sustainability plan in the process, and I've heard from many people in the agricultural community who have been very disappointed with the plan that's being submitted. The only tool in the toolbox is cutbacks. And when you're running a business and someone says, I'm going to have to cut back on your essential resource by 20% to 20%, you don't think people are afraid that their business is going to be shut down because they can't have sufficient resources to do it, and they're going to have to lay off their people? This is not an acceptable solution. If we had gone back in time, and if I was the supervisor, I would make sure that all the stakeholders were heard and that they had tools and ideas to include in the plan that could bring that aquifer back to sustainability. It's a crisis. So we don't realize it's a crisis, but it really is a crisis, because if we let those people down, if we turn our backs on the irrigated agricultural community in the North County, it's going to be a serious problem. Another thing that really concerns me is Ms. Arnold says she's pro-business. Well, I wouldn't call that a pro-business move when you don't let people represent themselves. She was a leader in turning away a water district from being formed. And so that means the county controls a lot of that process. So she shut out voices in that process. And right now, the general fund is paying over $1 million a year to pay for the groundwater sustainability plan for North County. Just like nobody wanted to pay for Los Osos' sewer project, because that was Los Osos' issue, same thing goes here, is that the people who are using the water need to be paying for the water management process. And going forward, there is no plan on how we're going to transition from general fund money being used for that process and having the residents themselves who are using the water to pay for that. And that is of concern to me. There's no plan forward on that. So when I was on city council, we did, of course, all the studies on, you know, what goes on in our area. And there's an amazing number of people who do their business online. She was talking about wedding planners and photographers and all those things. Those are all internet-based. And for all of you who live in Atascadero and probably in Paso as well, internet is not always easy to get. So one of my initiatives was to blanket the whole downtown with internet. You can do that. And so you could create a hotspot where people get internet for free, and it's an attraction. Didn't happen, but it was a great idea. But these kind of opportunities is what you have to look for. You have to know what people are actually doing. We have broadband coming through our county. This is something that would be critical for all the new technologies that we're hoping to attract to our county, so they have their headquarters here and not in San Jose or in Los Angeles. People do want to live here. I love living here. You all love living here. And so to have a vibrant economy is part of what makes it great. Thank you.
Thank you. So we actually have time for one more question. And Vicki, if we can limit the responses to 3 minutes to allow for that time. Okay. Let me start with you, Ms. Brode. The question is about rental housing. With the high cost of rental housing in San Luis Obispo County, should the Board of Supervisors entertain a moratorium on rental increases and restrict applications for short-term vacation rentals, such as Airbnbs? If so, how do you envision such legislation be implemented, and what would the economic impact of such a moratorium be? I can repeat that if you'd like.
Yeah, please do.
With the high cost of rental housing in the county, should the Board of Supervisors entertain a moratorium on rental increases and restrict applications for short-term vacation rentals? If so, how do you envision such legislation to be implemented, and what would the economic impact of such a moratorium be?
That's a tough one. Rental housing. I know that there was recently a bill passed from the state regarding rental housing, and there was restrictions on being able to evict someone, I believe. And some local jurisdictions had done some emergency ordinances, so there wasn't a gap of time that people could be taken advantage of. And I know with rental housing, we do have a limited supply here, and that kind of goes along with affordable housing, and I think it's important that we're providing enough housing in general so people don't have to rent, and they can purchase, you know, a townhouse or a condominium. I'm not really in favor a lot of government overreach in that sense that I don't want to control people, but I know there are some more reasonable ideas of, just like, you know, your property taxes can only go up 2% a year. And so having guidelines like that where instead of people saying, well, this month I'm going to double your rent so you'll leave and can't afford it anymore, and then I'm going to turn it into maybe a short-term rental or something. I have heard the idea of restricting like Airbnb or short-term rentals, and I think that goes back more to community character. I know in Pismo Beach, I've heard that there's a lot of short-term rentals because it's a beach community, and people don't feel like it's a neighborhood anymore. So I think that's more of an individual basis. I don't think that would really come to the county. Well, it might come to the county. But it's more of an issue of compatibility with the neighborhood. And I don't think that short-term rentals would probably have that much of an effect on the rentals in general. I think it's important that we welcome apartment complexes into our county, and also making sure that we're developing them around our transportation corridors, because housing is essential, but we also need to get them around the county. So if we can start developing those and we have a greater supply, then of course, just like supply and demand, the prices will go down. So I think it kind of ties all back to housing, and housing is something that we need to be working on all the time. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like me to repeat the question?
Sure, Mike, thanks.
So with the high cost of rental housing in San Luis Obispo County, should the Board of Supervisors entertain a moratorium on rental increases and restrict applications for short-term vacation rentals? If so, how do you envision such legislation being implemented, and what would the economic impact be?
Thank you. We have the Board of Supervisors has addressed this problem many times in the last 7 years since I've been elected. To date, we've tried to not enter in as a government overreach, and it is interesting. We have a lot of our beach towns were really built. They were vacation homes. They were people from the valley and people from other places of the state. That the town of Cayucas, for example, the town was built really with people's vacation homes. And what we're seeing now are families, generational families that have vacationed in our county, owned a home for, in some cases, 75 years, and they find that the short-term vacation rental, with the introduction of Airbnb and those kinds of things, where you can have a service help you rent your vacation home out. Many families come in and want to do that to pay for the maintenance of their home. They want to keep their home. They visit our county. They spend their money in our county, and they have generational memories, et cetera. We hear all this at our Board of Supervisors meetings. And the county has had in place for a while now restrictions on being able to rent out vacation homes in most of those coastal towns, because that is kind of a hot spot for vacationers to want to come and stay on the beach. So balancing that, trying to ensure that these neighborhoods don't become hotel rows, but yet the private property aspect. So imagine that. I'm sure many of you go to other places and, you know, you rent a cabin in the Sierras or those kinds of things. People like to come to our county and be able to do that. Families like to do that to help maintain or be able to improve their properties. And we are trying to balance that. So it is a challenge, but I think it is important that we continue to balance it and continue to try to weigh this out and provide people a way to be able to hang on to their to these vacation homes that they've had in their families. The high cost of rental, I do not think that regulation on rent, the government interfering, is going to be a good way to go, because historically we see in other places where that just dries up the rental market and there aren't any places to rent available because people don't get into that business, don't want to invest in that business when they may feel like they could get trapped in a situation so that they can't keep the expenses or higher than the rent that they can ask. So there are a lot of rental laws in place now, and I think really slippery slope to try to have county government involve themselves in rent control.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. So we're now at the tail end of this event. We will have a 5-minute closing remarks from each of you. And Ms. Barod, if we could start with you, please.
Okay, sure.
And then after the event, we're going to have time, a half hour, in the lobby or here to take your questions directly of the supervisors after this is over.
Well, tonight you've had an opportunity to hear from two women who certainly love their county, and there's no question there. We both care. But we have very different backgrounds, very different passions, and very different styles of leadership. When I think about the 7 years that the incumbent has been in office, I hear about many disappointments from the community on the votes that she has taken. When I think about her support for oil drilling in the Carrizo, or oil drilling off of our coast, or allowing the oil trains to come through our community, when she voted against community choice energy, when she failed to support a sales tax increase that would have put $25 million a year of money into our roads. These are things that go against our community. We cannot risk our future by staying the course. I believe good governance is possible. I want our county services to succeed for everyone. If you're either getting a permit or trying to find adequate child care in our community, trying to find mental health services, building workforce housing options, keeping our eye on the ball when it comes to our climate action plan. I want to thank the 1,000-plus donors who have contributed to my campaign and the many volunteers who have supported me. I'm proud to be supported by people across the political spectrum, the working people, labor unions, small businesses, CEOs, environmental groups, leaders in the agricultural industry, and elected officials. I especially want to point out that David Garth, former CEO of the Slo Chamber, James Patterson, former supervisor, Leland Collins, former director of social services for the county, Susan Funk, city council member here in Atascadero, and so many members of the community who have endorsed me. These folks trust my leadership. And as supervisor, I will welcome and encourage people to be involved in our political process. It's up to us to build the community we want to see. I welcome your input, and I encourage you to go to my website, ellenforsupervisor.com, and connect with me there. And if you have more questions, please feel free to get a hold of me. We have a choice in this election of who will lead our county for the next 4 years. Who will stand by us when there are challenges to face? Who will be the champion we need at the table when the important decisions of our future are being made? I ask that as you vote for a better future by voting for Ellen Bayrou for supervisor before March 3rd. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Arnold?
Of course. Thank you. So I wanted to say my opponent is correct. There have been things that I have voted no on. And one of them was, well, it wasn't really up to me to vote. It was up to the people to vote in the end. But creating a new government entity that would have control of our water, almost 80% of the people in the unincorporated area that live on property over the Paso Robles groundwater basin voted no. They wanted to retain the county water flood control and water conservation district as the management of our groundwater. Our groundwater is precious. This county doesn't have a lot of delivered state water. We depend on our groundwater, and it is up to us to protect our groundwater. The proposal that was made really supported by some outside agricultural investment was to create a new layer of government, and I don't know if you're all aware, but a California Water District, that kind of a government is very different from anything we've experienced in this county before. You actually vote by the acre. If you own 10 acres in a house, you have 10 votes, and the large irrigated landowner with 10,000 acres has 10,000 votes. The people that I represent that live in this North County, that small family farms and people and some larger farms would have lost control, as would the county, have lost control of our groundwater basin to outside investment. So, no, I did not support that. And, yes, we do spend some general fund money. We spent $18 million loaned out to Los Osos so that the sewer could come into being. And as we do with a lot of areas of the county, we spend money. So that was something I didn't support. And my opponent also mentioned the community choice aggregation. At this time, what the county did do was we spent money and we tried to do a little more research, because government delivery of your power, we all want and need dependable energy, and we hired a financial advising consulting firm to talk to us, and the results of that, I have that in my hand, I didn't know if that would come up tonight, was just that it's a very high risk and financial risk, and we chose not to put the taxpayers in that kind of a risky situation paying for energy. So with that, I would like to say, and I'll repeat, that it has been really an honor to represent you. I want to talk a little bit about what I have been able to accomplish in the last 7 years, and then ask for your support to continue. The water stuff's not over, and I want to be sure that this county and the people of this county retain control of the management of our groundwater. And we have already submitted a groundwater sustainability plan. Yes, it does call for reduction, but when you overplant and you overstress the resource, the only way out, unless you all want to pay for it, of projects to correct it investment businesses, we need to reduce. And I'm quite confident, as a small grape grower ourselves, I'm confident that with best management practices, that reduction can be made easily with very little changes to the crops. But anyway, I want you all to know, I was proud to be named Hero of the Taxpayer by the Central Coast Taxpayers Association in 2017, and it was, I think, for my efforts to add protection for Prop 13 in our county's legislative platform, so that we're working on that in Sacramento. I supported, by way of trying to build the economy, improve the economy, supported the San Luis Obispo County Regional Airport Extension, supported construction, and worked really hard on the construction of the homeless shelter at 40 Prado, worked for fair distribution of the water and protection of our groundwater, as I mentioned. I have been the strongest advocate for road maintenance. I see Supervisor Compton in the room. She can say that. I know that you all care about us prioritizing the budget to make sure that our infrastructure is protected, and that is a budget priority now. Expanded the county jail medical services, increased funding for law enforcement, and I am supported in my campaign by the district attorney and the sheriff. Worked with the County Fire Safe Council to bring millions of dollars into this county, millions of dollars. I chair it as we speak, and we're spending over $7 million for prevention so that we won't be victims of the big wildfires we saw in other places of the state. We've spent money expanding parks and trails within the county for your, the ability for our families to enjoy this county, and worked with the Home Builders Association to bring affordable housing to the county. So I'm proud of those accomplishments, and again, I ask for your support for my reelection on March 3rd.
Thank you. This ends our event. I want to thank Debbie Arnold and Ellen Barode, and I want to thank the Chamber, and I especially want to thank you all for spending 2 hours of your evening here to supporting such a fantastic event, which is in a very important process. Thank you very much.